This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you're lucky enough to have some money saved, but you don't know much about personal finance, you can drive yourself nuts trying to figure out how to make the most of what you have, even if what you have isn't very much. My guest Jane Bryant Quinn writes a syndicated personal finance column and writes regularly for Newsweek. She's also the author of the new book, Making the Most of Your Money. Quinn says that all of our deepest beliefs about money are formed in the years when we're growing up, but those beliefs are often out of date by the time we're adults and have money of our own.
Take, for example, Terry, the Depression generation, which has been written about at great length. When they came up, they first became functioning adults during the Depression, and they learned the lessons of their era, which was that life was extremely risky and that the way to defend themselves was to save money and not to take any loans and not to take any risks. And this was absolutely right for the 1930s and for much of the 1940s as well. But then, of course, the great prosperity started to swell up. But these people had learned their lessons, and they stayed with what they learned when they first came into the world. And so when inflation came up, it absolutely wiped out their savings account. It wiped out their insurance policies and all of their fixed pensions. They took no risks. They didn't join the great inflation investment boom. None of those things they were not capable of doing. And so when the world changed on them, they got wiped out. Now, fast forward to it's the boomer generation, but it's also the inflation generation. They were born at a time when the rules were borrow and spend. If you put money in the bank, inflation was going to take it away. Money saved was money lost. It was smart to borrow and spend because you could buy something before the price went up. Now, there's been a lot of moaning and groaning about, you know, how morally awful this was, but in fact, that was a very intelligent response to the conditions that we found in the 70s and early 1980s. Problem is, the world has changed again. So the inflation generation learned how the world worked. They should borrow and spend. The world is not going to work that way. It's already not working that way in the 1990s. And so just as the Depression generation was largely unable to change its attitudes and then got wiped out, the question now is, will the inflation generation be able to change its attitudes, get away from borrow and spend, and adopt what they need to do in the 1990s? This is an unanswered question at the moment, but one of the things I'm hoping my book will do is help people answer it so that they can turn around and say, hey, times are changed. I have to do things differently.
Well, financially, what kind of period are we in now?
We're in a period where borrow and spend is out, and that's because inflation is just not going to come back in double digits or in a high way. We have a very slack economy, and we're going to have it for a while. So we're in a period when inflation is low, when your real estate will, with any luck, go up in value, but it's not going to make you rich the way we expected it to do in the 70s and early 1980s. Your salaries are not going to stay ahead of inflation necessarily. Salaries are very flat, often falling behind. People may lose their jobs and find the only job that they can get is one at a much lower price. This means that your loans are harder to carry rather than easier to carry. It used to be you had a loan for a while, and over the years it got easier to carry. Now that interest isn't tax deductible in most cases, and the loans are getting harder to carry. All of this is just a totally different time. So the business of borrowing and spending is not appropriate for it. What is appropriate for a time like this is to carry less debt. It's to have more savings. It's to have savings in addition to your home, because you can't count on your home to send your kids to college and be your total retirement plan with nothing else on the side. So you have to be looking at your finances in a whole different kind of way. You know, the very best investment for 1991, single best investment, would be to pay off credit card debt. You have a credit card debt at 18%, Terry. You pay that off in the brackets of tax bracket of most people listening. Probably that's the equivalent of a 28 to 30% return on investment. And I don't know where else you're going to get a 30% return on investment this next year, and you can do it just by paying off that credit card debt. And once you've done that, you've given yourself a raise. It's like, all of a sudden, instead of paying all that interest to the bank, you're paying it to yourself.
You know, I want to mention to you that we very seldom do personal finance, self-help type of interviews on the show. And when your book was published, we kind of got together and tried to decide if we should have you on and talk about this or not. And everybody on the Fresh Air staff, and this ranges from people age 20 into their 40s, realize that they basically had no idea of how to save their money, no idea what to do with it, and no idea when you had enough money saved to make investing some of it safe. So the consensus was, let's have her on and find out the answers to some of these questions.
Terrific. This is the personal fresh air staff questions. Is that it?
Yeah. The other consensus was that everybody was totally overwhelmed every time they thought about saving money and investing money and all this type of stuff. So let me start off with a basic question. When do you think you have enough money to do something with beyond just putting it in the bank?
To start with, you should be having money to put aside, if you are so lucky, in a company plan. A lot of people work for companies that have these wonderful tax-deferred 401k retirement accounts. And there, you just take money out of your paycheck every 2 weeks or every month, however often you're paid, and it just goes into this account. And the company, in most cases, matches that investment. And that's like free money, just standing there waiting for you to pick it up. And if you leave the company, you can take the money with you. About 30% of the people who are qualified for these kinds of plans do not use them. And that's absolutely nuts. These plans are also tax deductible, so they're tax deferred, so they save you taxes too. So a lot of people who are shuffling around saying, gee, you know, I can't save any money, are in a position to sign up for these company plans, and they are wonderful. And I'll tell you something, Terry. People say, I can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
If you arrange to put 5% of your pay in a company plan, or if you don't have a company plan, if you're self-employed, you could have a KEO plan. You can get them right at your bank. They're real easy to get. You could give a individual retirement account. Banks also sell those, as do mutual funds. So these are not hard to get a hold of. If you put 5% of your paycheck first, right off the top, into these accounts, you will not notice one change in your standard of living. And I know, because back when I was living from paycheck to paycheck as a kid when I was coming out, I tried it and I discovered that it was true. And I've talked to any number of people who have said, you know, Jane, you were right.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about personal finance with Jane Bryant Quinn, who writes columns on the subject for newspapers, for Newsweek, for Woman's Day, and she's the author of the new book, Making the Most of Your Money. Now, when it comes to actually investing savings beyond your retirement fund, you recommend that unless you really know a lot about the stock market, that you invest some money in a mutual fund as opposed to going the route of, you know, putting some money on stocks that you've decided on individually. Why do you recommend the mutual fund over, you know, playing the stock market yourself?
Because people don't know enough to play the stock market themselves. You know what happens to them, Terry? They remember their winners, they forget their losers, and they never average the two together to see how well they've really done. And over time, practically anyone who tries to buy individual stocks does not do as well as a person who buys a well-diversified, no-load mutual fund and lets it run. You are kidding yourself if you think you do it well. I think that playing stocks is like a hobby. You know, it's like bird watching or growing orchids. You can have a lot of fun with it. You have a little mad money if you want to buy a few stocks. But do yourself a favor and put your core savings in a mutual fund, because I'll tell you anything, that's going to do better for you long term.
Okay, for our listeners who aren't part of the finance world, what is a mutual fund? How does it work?
Mutual fund is a pool of money where a lot of individuals put their money into this pool, and basically they give it to a money manager, a professional money manager, to run. And you can buy a mutual fund that invests in bonds, you can buy one that invests in stocks, you can buy one that invests in a combination of stocks and bonds, or one that invests in international stocks. Basically, you decide the kind of investment you want to make, and then you find a mutual fund that does it, and you pool your money with a whole lot of other people. And some of the best brains on Wall Street run these mutual funds. So for a very small amount of money, some funds have no minimum. Other funds have a minimum of $1,000 or $2,000 to start out with that you have to put in. For a very small amount of money, you can buy the best brains on Wall Street managing your money.
How long should you be prepared to leave your money in a fund to make it pay off, you know, to make it worth the investment.
At least 5 years and up. My general rule is that if you're going to need your money for what a particular purpose within 1 to 5 years, don't risk it anywhere. Put it in the bank, put it in treasuries, put it in a place where you know it will be there when you go back to it and you aren't subject to the ups and downs of the market. If you are investing for 5 years or longer, put it in a well-diversified stock-owning mutual fund. Your chance of losing money in stocks over 5 years is only about 6%. So that's, say, a 94% chance of making money. Over 10 years, you have a 98% chance of making money. Over 20 years, you have a 100% chance of making money.
Listen, what do you think the pros and cons are of going the approach of having a personal stockbroker and having the stockbroker invest your money in individual stocks and bonds as opposed to going through the mutual fund?
I'm against it. And the reason is that many people go to stockbrokers because you suggest they're confused, they're not sure what to do, and they say, this is the expert, this person will do it for me. A stockbroker's job, by the way, they call themselves financial counselors, which sounds a whole lot fancier. The stockbroker's job is to sell you stock. The only way he or she makes money is by selling you stock and earning the commission. And the stock brokerage firms have certain rules on how often they want your money turned over. They expect the stockbroker to produce a whole lot of commission out of your money. So the stockbroker is interested, sure, he or she wants you to do well enough so you'll come back, but primarily they are interested in trying to sell you something for their own commissions, and they may sell you things with especially high commissions. Look at all of the people who bought all those real estate limited partnerships who didn't know what they were buying. Stockbroker was earning 7 or 8% commission on those things, and they've all gone bust. If you do not know what you are doing, if you are not a real expert in stocks yourself, you put yourself in the hands of a stockbroker, and you are at great risk of buying things that you should not buy.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jane Bryant Quinn, and she writes about personal finance for Newsweek and Woman's Day and lots of newspapers. She also has a new book called Making the Most of Your Money. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about money, how to save it, and how to make it grow a little bit. This is Fresh Air. Talking to Jane Bryant Quinn about personal finance. Is it still a good investment to buy a house now?
I think so, Terry. I'm in favor of doing so for a number of reasons, one of which is just plain old lifestyle. Your house is not going to make you rich the way we expected it to do in the 70s and early 1980s. I don't think it's going to double and triple in value in the 1990s. But I think that your house will keep even with inflation. I think your house will preserve your capital. And the most important thing is that the cheapest way to live in retirement is in a paid-up house. So the thing to do is to buy it and pay off the mortgage as fast as you can so that you will possess it.
A point you keep mentioning in your book is that if you have money that you're investing in, you know, mutual fund or stocks or whatever, keep reinvesting the dividends. Don't take the dividends out and spend it.
That's right. You know, there is absolutely no power on earth, except possibly gravity, stronger than the power of compounding interest. The money that you make on your money year after year after year by leaving all interest and dividends in to be reinvested is absolutely staggering. You make 2 or 3 times what you would if you took the money out and spent it every year, which, by the way, is another reason I like mutual funds so much, because you can automatically reinvest all those interest and dividends. Whereas if you get you own a stock and you get a little dividend check once every 6 months, you say, oh, here's a nice $27 check, and you spend it. Whereas if it were in a mutual fund, you would reinvest it.
You know, I think to really play this game right, you really have to have a sense of the big picture, of the long haul. Because if you have some money in a mutual fund and you look at it every day, it's not going to, you know, be very different from one day to another. You're not going to make a big killing overnight. It's, you know, over years.
That's right.
It's going to make a difference. And I think it's hard to see that far ahead and believe in it.
I know, but if you don't see that far ahead and believe in it, believe me, you know, what this thing we always talk about, women anyway, will we be a bag lady in our old age?
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you don't think that far ahead, you know, that is within the realm of possibility. Also, Terry, look around you. You know, people are losing their jobs and they're getting retired early at 50 and 55. You know, retirement age is not 65 anymore. You are not going to work as long as you think you're going to work, and you just have to start putting this away in a logical long-term plan. And my feeling about money management is that it is not complicated. It is not complex. You get 1 or 2 or 3 simple ideas, and you stick with them. And one simple idea is put $100 a month into a well-diversified mutual fund and put it in every month and forget about it. That is a very simple idea. And over the long term, you'll suddenly notice that that is doing very well.
You know, there's a picture of you on the back of your new book. And you're sitting at your word processor with your hands clasped and every hair's in place and your little Rolodex is in front of you. The desk is perfectly neat. I look at this picture and I say, oh, she's got everything under control. But the sentence that really gave me heart, really let me take heart in your book was you write, I am often a slob about my own financial records.
All right, Terry, I'm going to tell you the truth about the picture on the back of my book. And
yes.
That is that my own office is such a mess. The photographer took one look at it and he said, we can't take a picture of this. So he cleaned up a desk and he made it look real neat and he put his Rolodex on it and that's the picture.
Okay, so if you're such a slob about your own financial records, how do you take control of where things are and what you have where and so on?
Well, the funny thing is actually that as I was working on that chapter in the book about trying to get your records in order, I said, this is a wonderful lesson for me. I will do it. It's not that I don't know where my records are, that I don't know what I'm doing. It's that I keep them in disorderly piles instead of putting them neatly in piles. And when you go through this exercise of saying, okay, I'm going to put my insurance policies in the right place. I'm going to put my power of attorney in the right place. And then you say, oops, do I have a power of attorney? Oh, I don't. It reminds you that you don't. If you just go through that little checklist of what you have and what your records are and where they should be, they remind you of some of the simple things that you need to do to get your records in order. And I actually did that while I was writing that chapter of the book. It was extremely helpful. I do it from time to time because I'm the family record keeper. And my husband is always coming in and saying, where is X? And I say, oh, it's in that pile. I haven't filed it yet. Well, I have now got everything filed.
As I mentioned before, everybody who works on the show, I think, feels really overwhelmed at the thought of how to save money and if you can save it, what to do with it. So let me ask you a couple of questions that people who work on the show have. Some of these are pretty specific. Okay, here's one. What's the minimum you should have in a savings account before you consider investing money?
The minimum that you should have in the bank is the amount of money that the rule of thumb is 3 months' expenses, but if you don't have quite that much, you should at least have a credit line that will give it to you.
Okay. One person wants to know, what do you think of the kind of socially conscious investment funds?
Some of the socially conscious investment funds have done very well. Pox World is one fund in particular that lately has been showing up on all of the high performance lists. So there are other funds that long term have done better than the socially conscious investment funds. However, some of the socially conscious funds have had perfectly reasonable and respectable records, and if you want to invest in them, go ahead.
Do you think it's ever worth taking out a loan to pay off a credit card if you've developed, if you've got a lot of money to pay off on that card and it's, 18% interest?
I think it is worth taking out a loan only if the loan interest rate is much lower, if you will then cut up all of your credit cards and not run up the debt on them all over again, because if you pay them off, get another loan, and then get credit card debt again, now you've got two loans where you used to have one. Also, when you take out that consolidation loan, which is often a home equity loan, you must pay it off very fast. If you stretch out that home equity loan over 10 or 20 years, you'll have paid more interest than you would have paid on your credit cards.
If you had it to do all over again, if you knew what you know now when you were in your 20s, what would you have done differently?
Boy, I would have saved more money, Terry. That's a fact. Do you know, I've got just this little comparison in the book that knocked me out when I did it. I just had no idea. I did this experimentally, and then I was amazed at my discovery. I took someone I called an early saver, and I said, okay, this person is going to save money for 10 years to 8% interest, and then she's never going to save money again for the rest of her life. And I compared that with someone who saved no money for 10 years, then started saving money every single year. Each of them was saving $1,000 a year at 8%. Turned out the person who saved for 10 years and then just left the money in the bank for the rest of her life and never saved another dime, that person did better over her whole life than the person who saved nothing for 10 years and then all the rest of her life put away $1,000 a year. That person who started saving 10 years later never caught up with the person who saved earlier and then quit saving. And this other person then, you know, she just sat there and let her money compound. This business, when you are young, saving, you have so much going for you because you have all those years when your money can compound. And that's what young people miss. And once those years are gone, they're gone. So if I had to do it over again, I'll tell you, I would have gotten smart with my 5% out of my paycheck earlier than I did.
Okay, here's a question that's going to put you in the position of making gross generalizations. But do you find that men and women have different kinds of mental blocks when it comes to personal finance?
No, I don't, tell you the truth. I find that men and women are pretty much the same, but a difference develops over time, and here's what happens. When a young man and a young woman both start out, you know, buying their first auto policy or life insurance policy or mortgage, whatever it is, they are equally inexperienced. Neither of them knows anything. They learn as they go along. What happens is if a woman gets married, she very often tends to start turning those decisions over to her husband because maybe she's not interested in them, and it is socially acceptable for her to say, I don't want to do it. Now, the man may not be interested in it either, but it is not socially acceptable for him to say no. He feels he has to do it, so he does. So 10 years later, what happens is he has had 10 years of experience working with money, and she has none. And then she comes around and says, oh, gee, I'm such a dummy about money. But she isn't. All she did is she didn't do it herself. Therefore, she didn't get the experience. Therefore, 10 years later, she doesn't know so much. But conservative money management of the kind I'm talking about is not hard. And all you have to do is do it yourself for a little bit, and you discover that. And I found, Terry, a lot of women, they get divorced or they get widowed, and they let their husbands handle everything. And they think, oh, what am I going to do? 6 months later, they're an ace because they have discovered that conservative money management isn't hard and they can do it.
Jane Bryant-Quinn's new book is Making the Most of Your Money. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.